Generative Art Podcast with Tim and Ruth. Today we have our first ever guest, Charlie. Let's get going.
Tim Holman. We also have
me, Ruth John, and today we'll be interviewing one of our lovely guests. May I introduce to you Charlie Gleason.
Hello. Hi.
Hey, Charlie, how are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. We should probably start with finding out a little bit about who you are and what you do.
Sure. I am a human being, Charlie Gleason. I am a designer and developer and computer science dropout and creative coding enthusiast. And at the moment, I look after design and front-end development and brand stuff at Heroku.
Oh, great. So what we want to talk about today is probably more your interest in creative coding. How did you discover creative coding?
I'm a very failed musician, and when I wanted to be a not failed version of that, I wasn't really working, and I had gone back to do computer science, and I realized that I had literally no money to make a music video, which was frustrating, and I like scraped together $1,000 Australian. I now live in London, but at the time, $1,000 Australian, and I gave
dollar
it to
dues, they call them.
Yeah. Now it's just squids all the way. and I got some friends, and I'm sorry if they're listening because they did their best, but the end product like was not something that was going to work. And then I realized, oh my gosh, I spent this money and I have like literally no option now. And so I turned to my trusty computer and made a thing called Tweetflight, which is a music video that pulls tweets in real time based on the lyrics, like a big Twitter karaoke. And then that went further than I ever thought anything I ever did would. And then from there, I got really hooked on this idea of using computers as a middle ground for making art.
That's really, really interesting. I want to talk a little bit just about the learning process for you, because I actually teach adults how to code on a coding course, and we get a fair few amount of musicians in. They're always actually very, very good coders. What did you use to learn to code? You said you dropped out computer science. So did you go back?
Yeah, well, I originally studied design, which was like the very hip titled, I think it was a Bachelor of Design brackets Multimedia Design. Back when multimedia was like a thing that it just meant you used Flash.
It's and, Microsoft Word, isn't it?
Yeah. Mate, you should see me with an Excel spreadsheet. but yeah, so I started writing ActionScript, which...
ActionScript 2?
Yeah, and then graduated to 3, which was actually like, I think 3 is a genuinely legit language.
We do think this.
Yeah, I mean, it's very...
We do think this. I mean, I think me and Tim have discussed this before, haven't we? We might make this an issue on the podcast.
We love ourselves some action scripts. Therefore, all of our qualifications are void.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, Titch Flash, that's fine. It's fine. It's over, right? The race is lost, but... ActionScript was, I don't know, it was legit. Anyway, so I started experimenting in that and then ended up working in advertising. And that was around the time that Steve Jobs wrote that letter of Flash, like which kind of like the death knell, right? Where he was like, well, it's never going to be on our phones. And they were at the time like the biggest phone. So then all of a sudden everyone started talking about HTML5. And I kind of dug in there. And then it became a perfect time to learn HTML and CSS and like the JavaScript, because a lot of the things that had been frustrating in the past, like using tables for layouts and all that kind of stuff, had started
those beautiful corner border radius images.
So many 4x4 pixel transparent GIFs.
Spacer GIF 3.
So all of that had kind of shifted. Yeah. So then it was like a perfect time to pick it up. And then it just went from there.
Okay.
Really?
Oh, great.
It's crazy. I feel like I have a very, very similar pathway. It's like the end of, you know, when you can spot one thing dying and you can see something else kind of popping up, rising out of those ashes. It's always tends to be a nice time to jump onto a bandwagon.
Yeah, it was a bit wild as well. It kind of felt like anything was possible in a way. And I started going to a lot of conferences. I went to Web Directions in Melbourne, in Sydney, sorry. And I went to Microsoft's Remix, which was about the open web, which at the time for Microsoft to be talking about the open web seemed quite, like even that seemed kind of bananas, even though now, I mean, everything's kind of changed, right? It's been nearly 10 years, which is really weird. But yeah, I don't know. It just seemed like anything was possible. And I met all these people who were really creative and fun, and I don't know, it was just a great time. It felt really exciting. So
did any of that inspire you to build some of the things that you've built? For instance, you have got Sandpit.js. Do you want to describe what that is to the listeners?
Yeah,
because it's very, very cool and people should check it out. It's sandpitjs.com for those listening.
Yeah, sandpitjs.com. I definitely need to, I mean, I'd love to do a version 2 because I think I learned a lot. But basically, Sandpit.js is a tool to kind of make creative coding easier. So it gives you a bunch of hooks into kind of a life cycle of setting up a piece of creative coding or a generative art, and then a bunch of hooks to do stuff to it. And it also ties into dat.gui. So if you, which is a interface for changing values, which you'll see a lot in used in creative coding, because it gives you a way to like really easily tweak values to see what impact that has. Because at its core, creative coding is just cool, sexy math. So, yeah,
that's our tagline
that
right there.
I just want to say that's our byline: cool, sexy math.
Yeah,
actually, the cool, sexy math podcast.
Yeah,
yeah, I approve. I mean, the logo designs itself.
That's just my
yeah, and then,
that's what yeah. I've got.
And then our collective mutual friend and great human being, Glenn Madden, who is a really great developer, he started helping me out with this kind of idea through some freelance work that him and I were doing. And then it kind of just snowballed from there. And the main reason was because he lived in Melbourne and I lived in London, and collaborating could be difficult because of time zones. And we wanted something where we could always have the state stored in a in the URL, so that way you could just like copy and paste 50 versions, and it was kind of saving the state of the artwork or like the values that the artwork was using at any point in time. So that's kind of its core thing. I think there's some incredible projects out there now that have definitely been better maintained. So I'd love to, I mean, at the end, I'll probably recommend a bunch that you should check out as well. But I still think, I mean, for me, I still use Sandpit, and I think it's cool. I would say that.
Just another small note on that, which is, I mean, you mentioned Glenn. He's such a good I guess like supporter of ideas, you know, when you've got thoughts about something, he's like a good listener and a good kind of person to help you like extend and grow what you're doing. Just generally nice, such a nice thing to have.
Yeah. It's like watching a kid get excited, right? It's like really intoxicating and like you get kind of caught up in it. And he's made heaps of internet famous stuff. He made like style components and CSS modules originally, and like internet famous Glenn Madden, as I call him. But yeah, it's definitely been a big influence.
It is. It's always nice to have that support network when people get just as excited about the little things as you do. Glenn actually... Talking about internet famous, the first time I met Glenn, we were actually stopped in the bar that we were in, and someone just went, "Are you Glenn Madden?" And I was like,
"Oh man,
what?"
Yeah,
internet famous Glenn Madden,
because he needs more ego. Glenn, if you're listening to this, you're doing a great job. Oh my god!
So that's great. So Sandpit actually saves the piece of art which you can generate with it. Because it's like this little app where you can put in all your little parameters in the GUI thing that you have, and it does.
Sure.
Like you are basically just creating generative art, which is amazing, without even needing to be able to code. Like you can go in and you can hack it if you want to, but you don't need to. And you're saying that you can save it in the URL.
Yeah, basically the parameters will get saved in the URL. So whatever you define as being like, I want this value to be changeable between these, like, let's say that you're like line thickness on some kind of like incredible, stunning, awe-inspiring, life-changing piece of generative art. You could say like, all right, between 1 and 10 is the values that this will accept. And then as you shift those around, that gets stored in the URL. And it made it heaps easier if we were having a conversation around something. You could just be like, cool, as long as you're running the same version as me, like the underlying code you're still going to need to write. As long as you have the same version running, you can kind of see these things happening in real time really quickly, which felt great for this kind of freelance project. And then when we realized how well that worked for this freelance project, we kind of rolled it into this concept.
Yeah,
of so a
it's like collaborative generative art, which I just had very slowly.
Yeah. Yeah, very okay. Slow collaborative generative
the name art. Of the podcast.
You do kind of eke onto the point there with all generative art, you know, you do have like such a big random aspect of it, but then I think when you're kind of handing off your final pieces or showing, you know, what you like best, you still do need that like fine tuning and curation.
Sure. So yeah. And I think a lot of the time as well, it's like that feeling of, I think the creative process generally is just one of like extreme anxiety and then extreme euphoria. And you just kind of move between those two states. So I think this idea came out of us being like, well, when you have that, like that moment where you're like, oh, I've got it. You kind of want to be able to keep track of that or to like to grab that moment. And I think it's generative art is incredible in that sense as well. It's so playful, like the ability to kind of just sit and end up with something that's so far from what you originally had in mind but is like objectively beautiful is a really great feeling. I really love that idea of it
being playful, actually. Just that's how I feel when I'm doing anything. It's, I'm playing
50% of the time, and then the 50% anxiety.
Yeah, well, that too. But I mean, you must have that, Ruth, because you work a lot in generative visuals and like your work with Live.js, which if people haven't checked it out, you should definitely check out Live.js because it's a really amazing like musical group around JavaScript as a language and like a
we'll
tool to create stuff.
All the artists singularly onto this podcast at some point. But one thing that I have been making this year, which I've been spending a lot of time on, is essentially that it's just one piece of software which generates art. That's the idea, which I have been using for visuals, but it wasn't really intended for that. So there's this awful part of the process where I've just gone, oh, quick, put some audio analysis in there and quickly make it work. So now I have to go back and back engineer the whole, oh, actually this works really well for visuals.
But it's such a good feeling. I love that though. It's like because of that real roller coaster, I think being like open to creative ideas, just sort of flowing and not putting too much of that kind of emphasis on getting exactly, like I think have an idea in mind about what you're trying to achieve, but just relax and like
the whole idea about the build itself was to stop having anxiety about building. I was trying to make the actual process of generating something as simple as possible. And it's not quite there yet, but then is anything ever there?
Never finished.
It has such a nice stage where you can just be like, here's a shape, here's a color palette, here's the grid, boom, there you go. Here's the nice visual. And
you do that thing where just halfway through, I feel like I copy and duplicate a whole folder and then just kind of keep expanding and expanding and expanding. And in the end, I've got about 8 different versions.
So that's the other problem. So I'm solving this with a MIDI controller at the moment because and what I'm trying to do is you do that. You're like, I really, really like this thing, like this visual that I've made. But if I just tweak, you know, like we're talking about like line thickness. If I just tweak the line thickness, I've got a whole new one. And wow, look at that. So rather than have 8 versions, use an interface to tweak, a little bit like a Sandpit, basically. But you are sort of, your interface is a piece of hardware. So you still create just one thing, but you have an infinite amount of iterations on that one thing, which you can control. That's the idea. It's getting there. I have to write a state machine for the analysis and the MIDI data. next stage. It's nice though. It's been work.
I do think like being able to record that process as well is really nice, like finding those moments, because I think I talk about him a lot. I've never met him. I would like to meet him, but Matt, I'm gonna totally butcher pronouncing his name. Matt Dussel.
Last year for Jazz Comp for You. So the opening for that was generative, like the first bit before LiveJS did their bit, was a generative video, which was some shapes coming up, and that was all generated in real time. It was all done in WebGL. And it was him and a guy called Simone. See, I'm butchering names now as well. We'll put a link to it in the description of podcast. It was really good just to see sort of his process, which isn't any different from what we do. It's just really nice. Yeah. He's just consistently churning out all this generative stuff like all the time.
He's just like this prolific creator in a way that I find like so inspiring. And I think also his Twitter is an incredible, so if you haven't checked it out, his Matt Diesel on Twitter, DESL, but his stuff is like constantly it's being released and you can check it out. And I was looking through the source code of the JS Conf last year, because he open sourced it, or the people that worked on it open sourced it, of which he was one. And like, I love it because the comments in it are just, it's like code comments that we've all written, just being like, this seems to work, not sure why. Or like, I can't quote it exactly because it's been a while since I checked it out. I love that. It just feels like everyone's just trying to make something that feels good, and that's hard. And
it's definitely like a big piece of the community. I mean, maybe it's a little bit less now than I used to see it, but especially when the canvas was kind of coming up, everyone just kind of let their code sit in there with comments and all. I definitely remember prowling through a lot of different things, kind of trying to understand.
Does anybody else swear to themselves in comments?
Sure. I'm really nerdy with that. I like, I always worry. It's like I'm a 75-year-old conservative in the way that I write on the internet. I get nervous. Don't
you? you probably have.
Well, that too, true. Hi, company.
You probably are not allowed to throw any comments. All my comments just are to myself, just being rude to myself.
Oh, mate.
I definitely feel like I lie in my comments. You know, I put a lot of to-dos of things, and then right before I publish, I just delete them and say, no, it's fine.
Yeah, like I'm never getting to that one. Because
there's so many in the software I'm writing. It's just to do this, to do that, to refactor the whole piece of software. Yeah.
It's like abstract logic into state machine.
Oh. You'll get around to it. Yeah, I think that's actually one of the challenges as well with being like a person that with a like grown up, you know, I freelance for a lot of the time that I really got interested in creative coding. And I think working for a grown up company, it is hard to kind of find time and inspiration, because usually by the end of the day, I'm kind of like, I've kind of gotten everything out of me because, you know, there's just a lot going on. And then whereas previously when I was freelancing, there'd be a lot more downtime. So you kind of think, I just have this kind of burning desire to create stuff. So it's kind of I think finding that inspiration is a real challenge. So if anyone else works for like grown up companies and has that same feeling, do not worry. You are not alone.
It's interesting, actually. It's something that's been on my mind a lot recently as well. I do exactly the same kind of thing. Just a lot of hard burn during the day. And then it's like, oh, do I really want to do a little bit more? But then sometimes you find the time.
It is hard to do it all day and then come back into it. I don't want to sit in front of a computer now. I don't do it as much as either of you, but I can understand. I have worked for grown-up companies in the past.
Yeah. Love this term that we're coining as well.
Grown-up companies?
Grown-up companies. I don't even know what that means, to be honest. But...
I just work for myself, so I'm a child. I don't know.
I love it.
Are you working on anything right now, Charlie?
Yeah, actually with Glenn of Glenn Madden fame, we've been talking a lot about design systems, so slightly outside the creative coding front.
Yeah.
But I've been really interested in this came out of a project that Tim, you created on... Yes.
Generative Artistry Podcast famous Tim Holman.
Well, yeah, internet famous Generative Artistry Podcast famous Tim Holman. your work in Markdown, in creating generative art, which is like one of my favorite projects, and I think it's incredible. And you open sourced it recently.
I did, yes.
But this is like a tool that as you like scroll through a page, it will update the code and show you the generative art. So you're kind of like learning about something.
So good.
And like, so it's kind of a way to like learn as you go, and you can like edit this input as well. So you can kind of see it change. It's like a really amazing project. So yeah, Glenn and I have been talking about, design systems and Markdown and how to like make creating and documenting design systems easier, in Markdown, but I have much less to show for it than you do, Tim.
My thing about that is this is on the Generative Artistry website, right?
It is, yes.
So this is on the tutorial part of the Generative Artistry website. When you, I've got a few examples of this. When people have built something where you have like a demo or something like that, you've got these tutorials, but actually underlying it is a completely useful tool, but sometimes it just goes unnoticed because the thing they've built on top is not the tool. So Tim's built these tutorials, but underlying is this really great other tool of how to do tutorials. Does that make any sense at all?
Yeah, it's like a total win-win. I'm just going to fan out on this for a second because I remember when you originally showed me this, we ran into each other in JS Conf Australia a long time ago when we were both younger.
Yeah.
Must have been 2 years ago, right?
2 years?
Maybe it was a year. No, it was only a year.
One year.
Oh, geez. And I remember you showed it to me and I had like a full, I had a full meltdown. At that moment where you're like, I will never create anything of value ever again because everything good has been made. You know that feeling? Like if you see like a really good project and you're like, well, I'm done now. I don't.
Yeah.
I get that every single day.
I think that's calling.
Yeah. Don't hang out with talented people.
That's I'm just like, what am I actually doing?
Yeah. But it's just an amazing, I remember talking to you about it. I just think it's really cool. And that's the kind of thing as well. I like that people are making tools at the moment. Like Matt, who I talked about earlier, is a really good example of that, where he's doing a lot of stuff in like Figma with plugins at the moment around like animations and design. And also I talk constantly about like Glitch and what Jen Schiffer is doing in that space with like building that community in a way that's just incredible. And people are kind of making tools more accessible and more welcoming and kind of being that gateway to creative coding or being creative on the web, which I love. That's it.
That whole landscape right now has changed so much over the last 5 years.
Yeah.
Of course, I guess initially with CodePen, but now Code Sandbox and Glitch. Netlify is doing so much as well, just to give you like a platform and to give people kind of back that open nature of all their code. Such a pleasure to, you know, you always kind of say the shoulders, standing on the shoulders of giants. It's definitely like that. We just have so much at any given moment. It's awesome.
Yeah.
Like a new technology comes out and it's like a big handful of people are going to be like, what can we do with this right now? What can we, how can we extend it? You know?
Yeah, which is awesome as well, because they're kind of, I think a lot of the early like experiments and projects, especially in that like HTML5, look, JavaScript can do stuff that's not annoying period of time in like 2010, everything was view sourceable, right? So you just see how they'd done it and then do it yourself. And then it became that big period of like, you must minify everything because bandwidth, and you must minify everything because it's just what you do. And like build tools, things like that. And all of a sudden, everything was kind of a black box again. You didn't really have the ability to like peek behind the curtain and feel connected to this other person's work or art and be able to kind of be inspired by that. So it's really wild to see that everything being open source again, or everything being this like huge melting pot of artists and creative people, just like, here's an incredible thing I did. Why don't you have it? Just feels really healthy and good.
I'm going to spend the rest of my evening just trawling. make myself feel really good about the thing that I'm building right now.
Yeah.
There is one thing that I have to ask you, Charlie.
Sure.
I was looking at the things that you built, and I came across iwillneverletyougo.com.
Oh.
Which is honestly one of the best things I've ever seen. So, but then,
oh my gosh, because it was like...
Can I explain it? I'm trying to explain it. Wow. Yeah, this is so good. It's a music video that you play in your browser that you can be a part of.
Sure, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it came out of... I made a record a couple of years ago, which was quite a sad record. And as a part of it, I kind of went back to the drawing board on making a new music video after the success of Tweet Flight, and I started looking at WebGL. And at the time, I was also trying to be a drag queen, which I was incredibly unsuccessful at as well. But it was a small window of time. I think I'm already too tall. You can be too tall to be a drag queen.
No, surely not. Come on.
But I got really into this idea of using WebGL and like adding elements of drag that I was kind of experimenting with. And the idea is that you would watch someone on the screen, and then during that time, it would kind of take photos of you surreptitiously. And then the next time you play it, everyone else who's watched it and has approved those photos getting published, right? So like it saves the photos as you go. At the end, you can publish them. That just gets sent out to everyone else. And it was using Images API, which made it really easy because there's no server side code on that. I think it's all open source as well. It is, yeah. It's all on my GitHub. But yeah, it was an interesting mix of like trying to create After Effects style masking and visuals in the browser in real time, and then also having this kind of element of playfulness of having other people around the world ideally being involved. I think my only issue with it is that 5 minutes is a long time, 4 minutes, like it's a long time for a song. And I think a lot of the time on the web when you come across these kind of things, you check them out. And after 30 seconds, you're like, oh, cool. And kind of the punchline of that music video doesn't really happen until you get to the end of the song. And so I think my optimism that people would sit for like 4 minutes watching me tear myself apart on screen was maybe overly optimistic. And if I did it again, I'd definitely show that the photos were being taken or allow you to like upload the photos as you go. But it was a lot of fun. And it felt at the time like I was really pushing what I was capable of doing, especially around WebGL shaders.
The effects on the video are amazing. For having that all done in just code. Yeah, that's wow. I'm really impressed. And you're right, I didn't get to the end, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's too long.
I enjoy watching you.
Yeah, I mean I loved making it. But basically it's a it's like a 5,000 what's 1920x3? It's like a 5,760 pixel wide video that has two videos going side by side, and then the mask is like a third video, and then in WebGL that gets chopped up, every frame overlaid and then masked against each other, which is like I think also the level of technical ridiculousness is quite hard to tell based on the fact that it was almost like the music video became more important than the technology behind it, which is kind of a shame because I think the technology is probably more interesting.
I didn't realize. It was kind of interesting you watch it. And that's something really well done, right? Is that, technically I wasn't aware. I was like, oh, wow, this just looks really, really good in a browser. This looks amazing. This is so good. And now that you just described it, I'm like, whoa. Oh my goodness! How did you manage that? It just goes to how performant WebGL is.
Yeah, if I did it, it's such a. I mean, WebGL, you can throw so much at it before it. I mean, one of the two of the downsides where it doesn't work on iOS. I don't know if that would have changed now because this was back at.
I doubt it.
Yeah, I don't think that's.
I still have people contact me every day about audio not working on iOS.
Yeah, fair point. If I ever do another sad record of sad songs about my sad feelings, I would definitely love to try and pick up that concept again and make it clearer, like what's going on, or make it more real time, because there's no reason that you couldn't photograph someone watching, give them permission to upload it, and then inject it into the video in real time as well, right? Like, I mean, there's stuff, it also shows you watching through your webcam. So there is an element of like live interaction. But yeah, look, I was really proud of it. It was like, it's kind of like writing a record that you're really proud of. It kind of critically, it gets quite good feedback, and then it just doesn't really go anywhere. Like, it definitely wasn't my most successful project, but it's definitely my proudest.
Like, the ones that you're most proud of, and then the stupid little things that you do, or at least that's my experience anyway.
You did make me feel very good about myself. Thank you very much, then.
Maybe the next record will be Happy Feelings.
Yeah. I don't know if I'd... I don't know if I'd... Making a record is so hard, honestly. It's so, like... It just, like, rips you apart. I'm really proud of all the music I made, but I think it's just so, like, emotionally exhausting, and I don't know if I'm in that headspace. Because I remember a friend of mine was like, are you going to make any more records? I was like, oh... I don't think I have anything that valuable to say at the moment as well. And I also think it's like, I was listening to a really great, speaking of drag queens, Trixie Mattel, who's like the world's most incredible drag queen. And she's really interesting because she performs like folk acoustic music in drag. She did a really good interview with Cameron Esposito, who runs a really great podcast called Query. And she was saying, it's like, the world does not need another like white guy with a guitar who has feelings. Like there's like the space is full, it's fine. Yeah. So I think that's why I always love those creative coding as an avenue for making music, because it was an opportunity to express ideas outside of like that very narrow box of being like, I'm a white guy with a guitar, look at me have feelings. It was like a way to kind of push that medium, or hopefully get people to feel more connected or find ways to, I don't know, just dig a little bit deeper. I don't know. I don't know if I succeeded at that. But.
You use Ableton to make your records, but one of the really interesting things about Ableton that actually happened this week that we're recording, or in the past week, they've just released another Learn Ableton thing. So they do these things on the web, helping you to learn electronic music. They did one 2 years ago, which was just the basics of electronic music, like beats and drum patterns and things like this. The latest one they did in the past week was synths. So they've just done this Learn Ableton synths
thing on the web. Like,
so you can just step through and you can do all these little interactive demos. And that's a little bit WebGL, I think, as well, actually.
Yeah, there's a bunch of stuff. I think they used three... And I know they use tone and animate. There was a few things. Yeah, they did a write-up of it. I'm such a fan. Oh my gosh.
It's so good, isn't it? They used tone for the last one as well, tone.js.
Yeah, and I think the last one was built in Elm, I want to say, but I don't know if that's true. I saw that in a tweet. I did not fact-check that statement.
So. We can check it out. But, yeah, it was really interesting to hear you say that you were using just Ableton.
Yeah, I went back and studied I think I've tried to study every course and dropped out of all of them at some point, except for design. Design I finished, but I went back and studied sound production around the computer science time as well. So after I did computer science, I was like, well, I'll go and do audio because now I'm going to be a musician. I really fell in love with it, but it takes a bit to learn, right? So I think it's so cool that they're making these tools that kind of help you understand like the core fundamental underlying structure of electronic music, which is ultimately always going to be like, a kick drum, a synth, samples, bass. There's like pieces that will always be there. But on the synthesizer one, it's similar. It's like all of those, underlying concept of how a synth works, like release and attack and sustain and whatever, all that kind of core stuff is hard to learn in an application. So I think it's wild that they're putting this stuff out. I'm such a big fan.
Yeah, if anyone's looked at the web APIs, you kind of think, oh, I can just kind of come in here and do something. And I feel like it probably, with zero experience, matches how it is in the real world, where it's like, oh, I'm creating this oscillator and I have to plug it into this what's happening? You know, it's a nightmare.
Yeah. And it's like, those sounds
it's
are so
correct, but it's difficult.
A tone is like soul destroying, right? Because the human ear is really sensitive to certain frequencies. I think it's like 10,000, 1,000. And it's like, I think knowing that stuff is, it just takes time and practice. And I mean, there's incredible resources out there like those ones. But yeah, I just think they're, Ableton has some incredible web stuff out there. And I, yeah, I'm such a big fan. Is, oh my gosh.
It's so great. It's so great to see. So this is the one thing I always say about the Web Audio API when I'm talking about it is, you just have to, if you want to use it for all these cool toys. So you can use it for just playing audio. That's cool. You can use it just to change some volume. I think everybody has a good concept of volume. But if you do want to use it for the whole synth thing, the electronic music, all these cool toys that you see, you have to have this fundamental understanding of, even just a basic understanding of, like, audio, which you're a web developer, isn't sure, it necessarily yeah. something that you do understand, because it is quite a beast of an API, actually.
Yeah, and I think there's some cool libraries that have been built on top to help. And I think that's the same with WebGL. Like, if you 3JS, I know there's a bunch of other ones now, like A-Frame and I'll say Babylon. There's like there's a bunch. But if you ever try and use just like vanilla WebGL to draw like a triangle, right?
Yeah.
It's like 40,000 lines, right? It's like Hello World in Dart. It's next level. And I think talking about like standing on the shoulders of giants, it's so wild that there's these people, communities, teams, groups that are like out there creating these tools. And I think that goes back to that whole creative coding. The core of it is that people are out there making these things so that you can get to the bit that's fun. And I think that's like a community of human beings, just a very cool thing. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. It is. And yet I'm still learning how to write shaders.
GLSL. Yeah, it's very unforgiving as well. It's not like there's a console log in there either, because it's run like directly on the GPU, right? So it's like...
I'm sort of halfway through the book. I started at the beginning of this year and then I got distracted doing generative art visuals. I will finish it by the end of this year, I promise myself. But that's one of the biggest things that I found when I started doing it, because you are writing GLSL sort of, you kind of use three to do it. I use three to do it. So you sort of whip up a sort of uniform, like with, or rather like the fragment shader within JavaScript itself, but you are writing GLSL. Error handling at all. So I was terrible with my floats to start with, because it's strictly typed and I've just been writing JavaScript for so long. And she's like, oh yeah, new float one. And even just not putting the point naught on the end, I would just be in a mess for like an hour, just going, what? No.
It feels super frustrating. But I think even so ES6 is like template literals make that easier just to even like get GLSL into three. So it's like that is a step forward. And you're like, when that's something you're excited about, it's like, geez. it's incredibly powerful. And I think people like Inconvergent on Twitter has put out incredible resources and tools if you want to learn more about shaders and generative numbers. I think they did a like whole incredible series of articles on using random with numbers to make art, and like, and then there was a whole bunch of stuff around shaders, which is well worth checking out.
Cool.
I don't know what that person is like, who that person is in real life either. So it's like a total enigma and mystery.
Oh, it's dun, dun, such dun. A good, yeah.
I have no sense of mystery because there's nothing mysterious about me.
I'm like, I wish I was Enigma. Let's see. It's faceless.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great. I'm out of questions.
Yeah, should we wrap it up on that? The mystery of the day?
Yeah.
Yeah. Works for me.
How can people get in touch with you, Charlie?
Oh yeah. If you would like to talk to me about generative art, music, drag or anything else, I am Super High Fives on Twitter, And I'm super high fives on pretty much everything. I think it was like the biggest fluke of my life. Yeah. Wow. I do. I'm pretty enthusiastic. And you can find some of my work at charliegleason.com or super high fives on GitHub. But yeah, just super high fives.
It'll be out there somewhere. Well, you can put all those links in the description.
Definitely. Awesome. Definitely. I feel like I have, I actually already have questions that I'll save for me.
Okay.
About the audio APIs for both of you, okay. I guess.
Yeah, fair point. Fair point.
All right.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Well, thank you both. You're awesome.
Cue and music.
Thanks very much for listening to this week's Generative Art Podcast. We'll be back next week with an episode on tooling, so make sure you listen. You can find all the links and all the information about this episode on generativeartistry.com.